This is an amateur recording of Seamus Young's book, How I Learned. It can be found online at his website, seamusyoung.com/20sided tale.
Chapter 9. Welcome to the Neighborhood. In the past, I wasn't interested in leaving the house. We have an Atari 2600 game system, and the device occupies my thoughts for most of the day. I enjoy the games, but I'm also curious about how the machine works and what it can do. I want new game cartridges, not just because I enjoy new games, but also because I'm endlessly curious about the machine itself. One of the games we have is Maze Craze. Maze Craze is my first procedurally generated game. It makes a random maze, and some bad guys chase you around it while you try to reach the exit. It's not terribly deep or interesting, but at one point I discover that by momentarily flicking the power off, I can put the game into some sort of erroneous state. It will generate an invalid maze. And by making many of these, I can examine how the maze-building system actually works. I spend many, many hours fiddling with this. I also play a lot of Adventure, another game with some randomized content. At one point, I ask Mom if she can quit her job and get a job at a computer company. She explains, patiently and somewhat confused by my request, that she doesn't have any experience in that field. See, I want her to get the job so that I can go to work with her and help. Somehow, I'm crushed that she explains why this isn't possible. I feel like I'm being left out if this whole computer thing is happening without me. I want to be part of it, but I don't know how to get there from here. Naturally, I don't see schooling as important or related to this in any way. I'll eventually discover the utility of education, but right now I think of school as the thing that stands between me and the part of my life where I can get a job doing computer stuff. However, this house is no longer a refuge for me. When Mom's friends are around, I need to leave. As much as I love the Atari, and as compelling as its mysteries are, I have to clear out when the adults get together and start acting insane. Being in this new neighborhood has given us a new circle of friends. They are older kids, with home lives even more messed up than ours. Patrick, being more outgoing, gets to know them first. He comes back with stories about the cool places they sneak into, and I'm intrigued. I sign on with Patrick and his friends. We venture far from home, trespassing on gloomy industrial spaces and railway infrastructure. When I say far, I mean by the standards of the day. To me, it seems like we're exploring strange, distant lands. In reality, this stuff is all within a half mile of the house. There's a huge pile of twisted, rusty scrap metal that we climb while we play Star Wars and act blaster battles and lightsaber fights. There are train tracks, where we pitch small stones under the wheels of a rolling locomotive. Sometimes the stones pop into a puff of dust, and sometimes the fragments shoot back at us like bullets. We flatten pennies on the tracks. There's a huge pipe large enough that I can walk through it standing upright that we explore now and again. It's pitch black inside, but we go in as far as the outside light can take us, and often wonder where the tunnel originates. The pipe delivers a steady trickle of water into a stagnant pool where we go to skip rocks and look for frogs. The surface of the water is shimmering with rainbow colors. We have just enough wisdom to understand this means, don't drink this. We find clusters of empty beer bottles now and again. We pitch these into walls for amusement. We find the back seat of a car, which has been dragged out here to use as a couch of sorts. There are also remains of a fire pit, littered with various bottles, and we understand that this is the skeleton of a long-dead party. To us, this is a secret look into the adult world. Of course, anyone over 17 is an adult in our minds. My favorite activity is to figure out how to get into the roofs, or how to get onto the roofs of these industrial buildings. Or any roof, really. I love searching for new ways up. I love being high off the ground where it's quiet. I love discovering new vantage points. We get into trouble now and again. Pat gets arrested for trespassing once. I narrowly avoid the same by feigning ignorance. This railway is private property? Oh, geez, sorry. I've never been here before. I was just looking for a shortcut. I don't actually like these kids. They're mean and rude, and they seem to hate authority reflexively and for all the wrong reasons. But this is the first time I've known any kids my age who didn't bully me. At school, they are polite, well-behaved kids who regard me with contempt. And here we have rebellious troublemakers who accept me. It's no contest. These jerks are the closest thing that I have to a circle of friends, to the point where I mistake them for such. Let's go to the store, Gary says one day. He's the alpha of our little group. We're still hanging around at the front of the porch at home because we haven't decided where we want to go today. I don't have any money, I shrug. I have an allowance. Every week, Mom pays me $1. But the money never lasts more than half an hour. I always run to the store and dump it into the arcade machines. Just take some out of your mom's purse, he shrugs. He says this like I'm stupid for not considering such an obvious solution. I know her purse is right beside the couch, hanging open. You can see the change inside when you pass by. I am seared with guilt the first time I take some money. It bothers me, and even after I've secured some candy and played a video game, I have a lingering sense of self-loathing and shame. The deed haunts me for days afterward. But I discover that the conscience is a malleable thing. The second time I swipe money, it's a little easier. Each time the guilt is less, and the ill-gotten gains can be easily and more easily enjoyed. I get bolder as time goes on, taking larger amounts at increasingly frequent intervals. Eventually, I get the nerve to steal dollar bills, and soon enough that it becomes routine. I find myself getting irritated with Mom when her purse is empty, and I can't loot it for a trip to the store. I learn to cuss. I do so at first with the fumbling awkwardness of a poser, but with practice I expand my arsenal of profane words and their proper uses. I enjoy combining them in various ways, but for moments of white-hot rage, nothing beats a hastily dropped F-bomb. My dad visits from time to time. He lives mostly in Greensboro, North Carolina, but once in a while he makes the trip to Pennsylvania. He'll visit us half a dozen of times before vanishing again for a couple of years. He likes to visit us around Christmas. He tries to give us gifts, but the clothes he buys are always too small. I assume this is because he gets us gifts 2 years earlier and is only giving them to us now. Much later, I'll realize he did this because he simply couldn't grasp how ridiculously fast kids grow. Just after the new year, we get a word that Dad is in the hospital, and that he's been there for at least a couple of weeks. Hi. So you think, Daddy, look at me. Why are you looking at that book? Why are you looking at that book, Daddy? I'm right down here, and I'm way more interesting than book. Hey. Boop. There you go. Just after the new year, we get word that Dad is in the hospital, and that he's been there for at least a couple of weeks. His legs and right arm were broken. Only his left arm, the one that's paralyzed, was spared. His condition is serious enough that he needs to be sent to the more advanced hospital in Pittsburgh. We visit him, and I'm terrified when I see his condition. Much of his body is encased in plaster. Dad is a man who loves coffee, enjoys smoking, and, as I'll discover later, craves alcohol. Here in the hospital, denied the use of his limbs, he is completely deprived of these comforts. Someday, he will find the strength to give up on the booze, and use the other two to soothe himself. Right now, he is without all three. He is a man tormented, and I can tell. I don't really know him very well, but Mom comments now and again how much I look like him, or talk like him, or laugh like him. Now I'm patterned after him in some way. I know I'm patterned after him in some way, that there's some relationship between who he is and who I am, or perhaps who I will be. I don't understand it, but I know this connection exists. Seeing him broken and ruined is like seeing myself broken and ruined. I feel very small and helpless, and aware of my mortality. He explains to Mom how the injury took place. He was leaving our house after his Christmas visit when he was hit by a truck. He doesn't know who hit him. The driver took off. It will be years before I learn the other half of his story.